I invite the power of creation to come and use me as a vehicle to move through. There is no limit to the creative genius that can flow to and through me.
So I want to start with a story about when I was down in Mexico doing a two-month meditation retreat. At the time, I was there for 2 months doing meditation, and at about the halfway point in the retreat, an opportunity came up where I got to go see the pyramids outside of Mexico City. The Ushuaias were trying to raise money to build a center in Argentina at the time, so they were auctioning off different things that we could buy at the retreat. And so one of the things that I bought was this trip to go see the pyramids. I'd been to the pyramids in the Yucatan, so I thought it'd be really nice to see the pyramids outside of Mexico City. From what I heard, they were huge. So the day came that we were going for this trip, and we took a bus into Mexico City and then got to the Mexico City Center. And so we set out, and I spent most of the day on top of the Sun Pyramid. The Sun Pyramid was huge. Like, it went way up into the sky. I remember climbing up top of this thing, you know, thinking it was way bigger than the ones in the Yucatan, in the Mayan Riviera. So I'm sitting on top of this pyramid for most of the afternoon, and I was doing a solar technique. When I was one of the Ushuaia meditation techniques, it was a mantra based on the sun. So I thought that'd be most fitting to do the sun mantra while sitting on the Sun Pyramid. Now that night, I came back. We drove back to the Mexico City Center, and it was the other teachers turned in early, and so there I was sitting in my room, and I felt like I was wide awake. I was completely wired. So I resolved that I wasn't going to sleep, and there's no sense trying. And being that I was about halfway through my two-month meditation trek, I was starting kind of getting the rhythm of longer periods of meditation. So I'm sitting there in my bunk, just meditating, and maybe a few hours passes by, and then at about 2 or 3 in the morning, all of a sudden, I just suddenly became aware of all this knowledge. And it was about the beloved within, and about creation and how creation comes to and through us. And I just suddenly knew all this stuff. It was blowing my mind. The experience was so surreal that I doubted that I was even having it. I second guessed that all this stuff that I suddenly knew was actually true or is real. I just thought, this is a fantasy. I'm just making this up. So the next day, I get on a bus and I go back to where I was staying. I was staying in Taxco, which is a little silver town in Mexico, and it was about 2 hours outside of Mexico City. So I get back to the hacienda where I was staying, and I go straight to Maharishi's house. And when I walked in the door, Maharishi looks at me and he says, "You're downloaded." And I'm like, holy crap. I didn't know what to say. I'm like, okay, so it actually happened. This thing's actually really real. And I said, well, I felt like I had to write. And I had to write right now. Like, just get it out. And he looks at me and he says, "Not now." And I'm like, well, I'll never remember this. I have to write it. Like, I'm going to forget. And he's like, now's not your time. Just let it go. And I'm feeling like manic and almost crazy about the whole thing, because I knew that what I was given was such a gift, and yet I felt like I owed it to myself or to the gift to document it. But my teacher said, just go meditate. He'll come back to you when you're ready. He says, you won't forget it, trust me. So I'm like, okay. So I let it go. And of course, by the next day, I don't think I remembered hardly any of it. It was just such a high vibration. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of felt like it wasn't there anymore. So for about 9, maybe close to 10 years, I started out with a personal blog, and then I started writing for my, eventually started writing for my You Matter site. But I'd been writing and writing, and maybe little snippets would come out here and there. And then when I decided that this book was going to happen, my Be Love, A Book About Awakening, that's when a more of this download, and that's what Maharishi called it. I was downloaded. So more of the download came out, and there was a few things that came out in this chapter specifically that were from that experience. So chapter 12 was a real special chapter for me, and it's something that I'm actually near and dear with, because being an artist for the last 25 years has taught me a thing or two about creation.
Yeah, so that's an amazing story. And you actually say in the book as well that up until this point in time with the release of the book, that you have never divulged this information publicly. You never talked about it before. You kept this to yourself for over a decade.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of those things where it's just, if it was so unreal that I couldn't even believe it, how could I expect anyone else to believe the story when I tell them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at this point in my life, I don't care about the story so much is the knowledge that I've found in me is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So yes. So this chapter, this session will be dealing with a lot of what was downloaded into you in Mexico, which is crazy. So the first thing I want to ask you about is how you have some different ideas about how creation works, and if you could explain your ideas and experiences with creation.
So creation, I've learned that creation is something that comes to and through me. I'm not responsible for creation so much as, you know, I just have a role to play in it. So we tend to think that, you know, we're responsible for all the things that we create, but the depth, there's a deeper depth to creation, and the depth of creation, what's actually happening is it's creation is using us as a vehicle to express itself through. And rather than me being responsible, I'm more like a co-creator, or it's a collaborative expression that and I join the divine in expressing the nature of creativity. So when you look at the word creative, it comes from creator. Creative, creator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's only one true creator, and in my experience, it's God. So I'm a collaborative co-creator with God. So that's sort of my idea about how creation works, and I'll get a little bit deeper into it as we go along here.
So you say that being an artist has taught you a different way to live, and what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, what I've learned about creation is that it applies to how I live my life. Creation doesn't require the input of my mind. Rather, if I just rest in my heart, my best work comes forward. So when I'm tattooing, my best work comes forward when I let go of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I allow the creation to move through me. And the same applies for life. If we're caught in our mind trying to figure out, predetermine, you know, weigh and measure, we sort of miss the moment. And that's what happens in creation as well. I've learned that in becoming a working with creation and being an artist, I don't have to push the ball uphill. And I think we were talking about this last session about, or maybe a session or two ago, about, you know, just learning how to be maybe a witness or a participant in your life. And that kind of sums up my experience as an artist. I'm more of a participant in doing artwork. It's not me doing so much as it's doing me. and I'm participating with it. When I surrender, I flow with all that's moving around me, and creation happens the same way. When I surrender, creation just happens through me and around me. Mm-hmm. Same as in life. When we surrender to life, we allow the what's being created to kind of come in and fully evolve. And last, by pouring love into my life, or pouring life into my creations, what is created is more divine in nature. So, and it gives us the best life possible. The more love we can pour into the what we create, more love we can pour into our lives.
I think the one thing that you're saying, from my point of view, is that I've always understood creation as being something that I have control over. And then people really fret on coming up with their ideas, and that whatever it is that they create is entirely them. It's their creation. What you're saying is very much different, that you're just a vessel in producing it, but that creating is actually something that's entering you.
When you get to a very high level in creation, or you have some time in, you know, so I have time in on my end of creation, and I can produce a half decent drawing and tattoo or painting. But with the time in that I have, you sort of have you gain an experience where you begin to realize who's in control or what's happening. You know, and a lot of highly tuned athletes or musicians will again talk about that place called the zone. And while visiting that space, it's like you're not even doing it. It's just happening. You know, mm-hmm. like you'd be like you when you're right in the pocket hitting the drums set. Are you thinking about where you're going to place each stick?
Everybody always says the same thing. Once you start thinking about it, that's when you make mistakes.
That's right.
And some people will say it's because you need to practice subconsciously. I think like we all need to develop our skill sets, the ability to actually do something. It requires practice. But then I feel like that's like, that gives you the foundation to be able to actually do something. So if we were to relate it to playing drums, you need to actually learn how to play the drums. Mm-hmm. You need to practice a whole lot to become better at them. But in the moment of creating, especially when you're performing with other people, you're responding and reacting to everything that's happening. And the less you think, the better it is. Mm-hmm. It's almost always the situation. And when you start overthinking things, then that's when you tend to fumble. Mm-hmm. And also, too, like when we get into the zone, there is a heightened sense of everything that you do. And you're thinking less, but you're feeling more, and you can feel a lot more energy as well. And so what you tend to play will surprise you. Like if you were to record it and listen back to it, you think to yourself, I can't do that on a cold start. Like if I was just to sit down, hadn't touched anything yet today, and I try to do what I just heard, I probably can't get there.
So when you're at your very best and at the peak of your creative points, it's really not you.
But that's the thing. A lot of people are going to hear that and relate to what we're talking about. But the big mystery is what propels that? What actually makes that happen, which is what makes this session so fascinating in nature, is because there's a big question mark. Now, in one paragraph, you actually say that when you're in the act of creation, you get lost in the presence of God. That's a pretty heavy statement that you make in the one paragraph. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, and I think the answer to this question answers with the question that you had just said there about how do we get there? How does that happen? And what I've noticed is that when I'm lost in the act of creation, that any sense of me dissolves away. I'm no longer, my ego is no longer in the room. There's only, all that's left is the pure essence of my soul, which is God. So when I say I get lost in the presence of God, I'm lost in the presence of my soul. I'm lost in the presence of the silence that resides in me.
Mm-hmm.
It's being in the zone, being in that silence. The idea is to keep letting go until there's nothing left of you in the process. And when you keep letting go and you get accustomed, you understand what your role in creation is, you're more readily available to allow creation to gift you with its presence. When you know your role in creation, but you know, it takes a while to assume your position in it. We want to insert our dominance into what it is that's happening, and we squish out the divinity in things when we do that.
So what I wonder with that is, if we spend a lot of time practicing something and we become, you know, skilled at it, what if at that point we stop practicing? We're still doing it, but we're not honing our skills like we were when we were starting off, like when we were first starting off. And you spend more time with meditation and understanding the connection between you and your soul and setting down your mind and all of these sorts of practices. If we were to practice that, this is just coming to me now, but a lot of people talk about this sort of zone as a fleeting muse. And I'm wondering if people could tap more into that if they spent less time, say, on their instrument, and they spent more time with this sort of stuff.
Well, there's definitely a place for developing your relationship with the silence in you. And there's a place for making time to meditate, like we just talked about in the last session.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more than it makes us a better musician or artist, it makes us more fit for the world. And it also helps develop, you know, a deeper understanding of who we are. And through that, life becomes more effortless and joyful. And it's not that life just doesn't serve up any more problems and that all the problems of our life goes away. It means that we now relate to our problems in a different place. So if you can imagine being in the zone while playing your drums and that state of euphoria that's sort of in place, what's happening in that moment that is that you're actually in the moment. You're not thinking about next week. You're not thinking about what happened last week. You're in front of the drums. You show up for that performance. And when you show up ever so intently, you know, the moment starts to become, it comes alive. And then the next thing is that you're not thinking. You know, you're just resting in your heart. Now, we can do that without closing our eyes, without doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
We can learn how to just go into that space all the time. And that's what I would suggest, is to make it a practice to keep turning inward and surrendering.
On the path of creation, there are no bumps on the road. When you enter God's grace, God paves the way for a smooth ride. It is you that gets in the way and creates all the bumps.
And it's funny because oftentimes you hear, again, we'll use drumming as an example, but what is it more of, physical or mental? And spiritual is never part of that equation. It never comes up. It's sort of an interesting thing. I did an episode in particular where we talked about a lot of this kind of stuff with performance and how we approach our instrument. And this individual is very much in line with this way in thinking. And I believe that he experiences a lot from playing his instrument because he's so dialed in with this sort of mentality, like this way in thinking. So I think it's part of an equation that's often missing. People aren't thinking about that being actually a part of it. You know, I had no idea what that was. What's going on here? This is awesome. I want this all the time. And that's the thing. You know, that's what everybody's craving. Everybody wants that because it's such an amazing experience.
It's why I'm sitting here in front of you today. When I was in my early 20s, I was having those experiences, and it drove me to want more.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you explain to me what you mean when you say creation awaits your invitation?
The answer's in the question. Creation awaits your invitation. So we are merely co-creators in the process. We invite creation to come and move itself through us. You know, and I think the gravity of this question doesn't need to be a long answer. The gravity of how important this question is in the answers in the question. Creation always awaits your invitation. And we sometimes we just get in the way of that.
Right. Now this when I read this in the book, this is when my mind started to really get blown apart here. But you mentioned that the nature of creativity is drawn from the unknown and manifests itself into the known. So what does that mean?
It comes from God, and creation is actually the feminine aspect of God, or that polarity of God. I think of God being unmoved in the unmanifest. So the unmanifest realm is that massive spiritual realm, the etheric realm, whatever you want to call it. And the movable aspect of God is what is the God that is made manifest. And so the movable aspect of God is creation. It's all of creation. And it's feminine in nature. All things are born through the feminine. It comes through the feminine. Like we come through the feminine. In all form itself, all creation itself is born through the feminine. And so there's all of humanity is being created through the feminine, for the divine feminine is what moves through us when we're creating. So when you're in the pocket with your drums, you're experiencing the beloved within. You're experiencing the divine feminine. For years, I couldn't understand why I felt, and not girly femininity, but I felt femininity in the act of creation. Now I get it. It was creation itself rooted in the feminine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's God couldn't move itself out of its place, and so it moves through creation in the movable aspect of God.
Mm-hmm.
But the nature of what's created is that it's constantly in relationship with the known and the unknown, or the manifest and the unmanifest. You know, you see that in particle theory, where if you magnify this laptop or this desk, it's atoms, right? Mm-hmm. And then inside the atoms, there's a particle, the nucleus. The nucleus is the hard part. It's a solid matter. Now, if they magnify that solid matter again, they find out there's more empty space and a smaller piece of matter. And then when they keep magnifying that particle, what they discover is the particle's blinking in and out of existence. It's here, it's gone. It's here, it's gone. So now what creation is matter, and it's actually here, and then it returns back to God, to the unmanifest. So this table is actually blinking in and out of existence. It's here, and it's gone. It's here, it's gone. But it's happening at such a rate that it's simultaneously in two places at once. But it's returning to the God, and it is God. You know, that's a pretty far concept. The table's God.
But, yeah.
But everything comes from God and is made manifest through God. It's born through the divine feminine. All matter. And it's constantly, once it touches into this world, it's returning. It's on the move. Nothing ever stays the same.
Man, that's that'll bend your mind a little bit.
that's just my theory on when I learned that about particle theory, how it appears and disappears. I ask myself, where does it go? It must go back to God. It can't get lost because it's been placed. You know, if something has been placed, then it holds itself there by the consciousness of the one that placed it. So it can't be lost when it disappears. It must be going back to itself. I could be wrong in that theory, but nonetheless, it's my theory.
Mm-hmm.
That might change or evolve.
So explain how, when we have an idea that comes to mind, what we're actually seeing is the end of creation and not the beginning. We actually, you and I discussed this off air before, saying that when you're at the beginning, you're actually closest to the end.
Yeah, that's another aspect of...
Mm-hmm.
When an idea comes to us, it comes to us fully formed. And we see the beginning of creation as this, when an idea drops in, is that's the beginning. It's actually when an idea comes to you, it's the end of creation. It's the beginning of what we know, but 99.9% of all the potentials and things required have been worked out in the unmanifest before it ever comes through into the manifest. Everything we need is here and ready when we begin to manifest something into our life. So as soon as the idea comes, all the potentials are there for it to happen. We cannot be given an idea unless we can actually form it. And that's the gift of creation, is it comes to us and it chooses us to be actualized and realized through, and then we become co-creators with God in the process. But it's not us that has done all the work. We're only the completion of creation. That last little 1%, that's all we are doing. And the rest of it is already worked out for us. In my book, I talk about Walt Disney and how he just had such a deep understanding of how creation works. He said, if you can believe it, you can see it. You know, we're only limited by our own imagination. Like there's a ton of quotes by him that talk about creation, because he was a master creator. He understood the potential reality of when a thought comes, that it can be completed. And the proof that we can create something is the fact that it showed up in your mind as a thought. If it couldn't happen, you wouldn't have the thought.
So for some examples in your career creatively, because this is like, you've done a lot of tattooing well before any of this knowledge mm-hmm. became apparent to you. So what I'm really curious to know is how you've perceived the act of creation now compared to how it used to be when, say, you started tattooing, and whether things come to you easier. Like, what kind of differences are you noticing with creation now?
Well, I used to force it. I'd inflict my will upon what it is I was trying to create, and it was just such a difficult experience for me. And I'd, like, even for when I was practicing drawing, like, it was just such a difficult, gripping experience where I felt like I was trying to squeeze out the images out the end of the pencil. If I squeezed the pencil hard enough, they'd come out. But it wasn't until I learned how to let go well in the act of creation that my best work just started happening. But and then it lends into many other things. How we learn how to create and manifest in a more effortless way. And in the when we stay steadfast to what it is that we want to create, it makes everything kind of more possible, and it flows less, more freely to and through us. Mm-hmm. We just keep holding steadfast to what it is that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've found that through anything that I've ever done, is that I hold steadfast on the project at hand, and by the grace of God, it happens. And sometimes the most amazing things happen in such short periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So with people who may not understand or can't wrap their mind around the concept of creation, as you explained, how should they approach a situation? Like, what's the entry point to begin creating this way?
It's a matter of learning how to relax into your creations. So and that's when we're talking about creation, you can just generalize this in your life. When you learn how to relax and allow things to unfold in your life, then your creation is more of a collaborative one with the divine. So this conversation, I could be very uptight about the whole thing, trying to control where it's going to go, or I can just allow it to unfold as a creation in front of us. Mm-hmm. And if I'm silent and I'm listening to the silence within me, I don't have to think about the words that I'm about to say. 3 seconds ago, I didn't know that I was going to say what I just did to you. And all we have to do is just stay surrendered to within ourselves, and the dialogue will just kind of happen. You know, we do have some structure that we're following, mm-hmm. but for the most part, we're allowing what comes up. And that's the gift that we're giving creation is surrendering ourselves over to the process. So I would tell people to stay out of their minds, stay present with what's at hand, and allow the what it is that you're creating in your life to have its own life. When we try to squeeze our creations to fit the mind's view, we squish out the divinity, we squish out the life that creation contains. You know, the radiant spark of God that moves into this world that's being co-created with you gets dimmer and more and more lifeless the more we squeeze at it. So if we allow ourselves to just kind of glide along with our creations, just imagine a spark of God or creation coming into the world, and you're just gliding along with it. You don't slow it down in the process when you touch it. By touching the spark of creation that's moving through, you actually hinder the process. And when I say touch it, I mean insert your ideas and how you think it should go or will go or how it ought to go. You know, you just move with it. It's kind of like just like water going down a stream. So, and all we ever need to know is what's resting on our heart. And then those are the most beautiful creations that we create.
So there's a term in the book that you use, and I'd like for you to explain what the term Hiranyagarbh means.
Wow, you said that really well, Seamus. That's excellent.
Yeah, it only took 4 times.
This is a really, really fascinating saying, or story rather. I was writing about, in my book, I was talking about how creation comes to us fully formed. Some of the things I was just saying to you there, And I was writing down, creation comes fully formed, it's feminine nature, and that we have so little to do with it, and, you know, we just go along for the ride. And then I remember writing about that, and I was starting to feel really self-conscious about what I was writing. And so I thought, I'm going to set this down, because this just sounds too out there. You know, when I say that an idea is the end of creation, how can I prove that? What proof do I have? And I a lot of the times, if I write something, I need to have a certain amount of logic worked out around the concept before I'm willing to share it. So, but Now in this chapter, I'm sharing logic that I actually can't. I have a hard time working the logic out around it. Maybe at this point, maybe later down the road, I'll understand more. So I set the writing down and I decided I was just going to take a break from writing. And I flipped on the Gaia Network and I was watching a 13-part series on yoga. So what comes on the screen when I first flip it on after writing about this concept of creation is this guy. And he says, you know, when we are in the act of creation, we are not the ones doing the creating. That all creation comes to you fully formed. It's feminine in nature. And we just go along for the ride, basically. And my jaw's in hitting the floor. I'm like, and he went on to say everything that I was talking about, just in a little bit different terms. And he says, in the Vedic culture, we have a term for this, and it's called Hiranyagarbha. And I'm just like, I cannot believe what I'm hearing. So the term Hiranyagarbha refers to golden egg, and it translates to golden womb. So creation comes into this world through this golden egg, and that's the seed of creation. So Lord Shiva had sent this egg to Brahma, and then it came into the world, and it split in half, and then everything was created. And so that's sort of the metaphor for how all creation works, is it comes to us as this golden egg from the womb, and it just opens up, and all is created, and it's already ready to go. We just hold the egg, or just put it in the ground, or whatever. So it was a really interesting concept, and it actually gave me something to talk about to validate what I was experiencing, and that was part of that download. That, you know, maybe some of that crazy stuff that just kind of fell into me was actually true.
Hmm. Now, something we've been talking about when you're an artist or you're a musician, you're an illustrator, I don't know, like a writer, anything that's creative and what people would say is creative. What if somebody who's listening to this doesn't feel as if they're inherently creative? And I just want to point out, like, does this session still apply to those sets of people?
Yeah, absolutely. It's your life is a creation. And actually, your life is one of the most elaborate creations that you'll ever participate in. So, you know, this applies to everyone, not just artists or musicians. And it applies to the whole of your life. How you converse and relate with other people's is a creation. How you dress, decorate your home. How you navigate your life fits in the realm of creation. So everything is a creation in your life. You think of everything that you do, you know, sets a thing in motion, and it's all a creation.
Mm-hmm. And so how would we call forth our creative side? How many tips for that?
We understand that what our role is in creation. You know, it's kind of like in the book, I think I talk about, it's like driving a car. You know, you sit in the car and you have to steer. You have to push the gas pedal. But the car really does all the work. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't require as much effort as you think it does. So creation is the same way. How we call forth our creative side is that we allow it to pour through us. And when we know what our role is in creation, we don't force it. We allow it. Mm-hmm. You know, and people tend to try to push creation and force it to come out, or they'll say that my creative side is blocked. And that's just, there's no such thing as writer's block. You may be experiencing it, but the creative aspect of you is never restricts itself. The tap never turns back. It's us that gets in the way. So one of the sayings that I quotes that I wrote in the book is that in the act of creation, there are no bumps on the road.
Mm-hmm.
It's us that puts the bumps in place. And that's by inserting your dominance or your ego or your mind. As soon as we insert our mind into what it is that we're creating, mm-hmm. It's like we turn the tap way back and we restrict the flow of creation coming through us.
I could think of an example, as you said, writer's block for an example. Let's say like you wrote a blog or you wrote a book or you wrote anything. It doesn't even matter if it's very long even. And it comes with a lot of praise from critics and people are just ranting and raving about your book or your article or whatever not. And it's being featured, etc. Then it's time to put up a sophomore effort or another book or another piece of writing. The first thing that's probably going to run through your mind if you're thinking too much about it is I have to one-up that thing because now there's an expectations for my readers that are expecting something more evolved than the last thing they had just read. So that's something that we need to just exit out of our mind, right? We need to keep that out of there.
It can be a healthy pressure sometimes to try to just keep evolving, pushing the ball, pushing the envelope. It could be a thing that keeps us devoted, but when it becomes a thing that overrides our ability to let go of our mind, or it takes us out of the silence, or it takes us out of our relationship mm-hmm. with allowing the creations to move through us, then it can be a hindrance. But right. Understand that any of the voices in your mind is just the ego. It's not you.
The ultimate meaning of free will is to choose your highest potential that lands you in a conscious life. A conscious life is one that has lived with the grace of God leading the way.
Now, you also say in the book that the presence of creation has a way of guiding you into the depths of your soul. How is that so? And what does that mean exactly?
Well, it's all about hitting that zone. In the act of creation, I've had thousands of experiences where I enter into the silence. So in the silence, I find myself. I find the soul. Because I know my role in creation, it allows me to sit back. By knowing what role I play, I can allow the creative aspect of the silence to roll through me. So when I'm doing my tattoo work or I'm painting or I'm writing or I'm talking, I'm allowing it to just move through me. I'm not trying to force it out of me.
Mm-hmm.
I just relax and let it happen. And I used to watch my tattoo artist, and I would tell him, just relax, let your body, let go in the process. You don't need to get so involved, just watch where you want to go. And that was like one of the best ways to get better at outlining a tattoo is look where you want to go. Where I watch artists, the first 100, like I said this before, the first 100 tattoos they do, they're squeezing them out the end of the tube and they're looking right on the spot they're tattooing and their body's tense and they're sweating. I went through that my first 100 jobs or more, but it was eventually what you learn, what your role is in creation, you relax and you just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of happens.
Something I'd like you to expand upon is how when you add love to your creations, you are ultimately inviting God to join you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. The act of creation is a collaborative co-creation with God. So when you add God, when you add love to the equation, it is like inviting God to be with you. In an even larger capacity, it's almost like it amps up the grace and the power that we experience in the act of creation. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed this in artwork where it's manifested or it's brought forth for God. So it's divine. It has a divine purpose. Or things that, you know, when whoever was the composer or creator of anything, when they really pour, you know, all their love into the project, it seems like it has an extra radiance or an extra deep glow about it. And I have this idea that when we pour love into what it is that we're creating, it actually helps enliven the divinity in the viewer who's looking at what has been created. So
hold on. So what you're saying is that because of the love poured into it through the artist, the person who's now witnessing the art is feeling that too. So that stays in the creation.
The person who's witnessing or looking at what's created, it enlivens their divinity. It enlivens the God that lives within their soul. It creates a sort of an experience where if they're a spark from God, that it's like adding a little bit of gas to their spark. So something lights up in them, and that's why we get moved by the presence of something that's so elegantly laid down, or that something that has had a ton of love poured into it.
That's really, really interesting, because I don't know, let's just use a hypothetical example of somebody who's in an art gallery. You'll see somebody will stumble across a painting and they'll just gaze at it. And then someone may ask them, well, what, like, you really like that one, eh? Like, what is it about the painting that you really like? And they might respond with, I don't know, but I'm really drawn to that. Or sometimes there's things that you can't specifically tell what's so fantastic about it, but you just love it.
You're moved by it.
Mm-hmm.
What part of you is moving? Because people will say that a lot. It really moves me.
Mm-hmm.
What's moving? You know, it's the divinity, your spark is being ignited through the object that has been created. And the act of inviting love to come join you in your creations, it enables that divinity to really pour forth or pour into the things that we are creating.
Yeah, that explains a lot, actually. So what's happening to us when we get the aha moment? You know, sometimes we'll be sitting there and then just a great idea comes to mind, and then you feel like incredibly compelled to just start working on it right now. Can't wait to get into it. So what's actually happening in that moment? What's the appropriate course of action that should follow that?
Well, that's the golden egg, Haranyagarbh. When it's that golden egg that comes down and it just opens up in you. So the act of creation has just dropped itself into you. And that's why you can, when I say that creation is not you doing something, because all great creations kind of start with that, ah, it's this sudden, there's a sudden knowing in you. And, you know, it's not like you, it's not that it didn't come from somewhere, you know. In most, like all of my greatest creations, there was a moment where it's like, oh, I know what I'm going to do. Ah. Mm-hmm. and that sort of happens a lot in creation. It just suddenly comes upon you.
Mm-hmm. So this might be a little bit difficult to wrap our minds around, perhaps, but is there a way in understanding how a creation comes to be? Is it, you know, a conscious, you know, is it conscious from our minds, or is it something else? And I ask this because I relate to a point you made where you marvel at what you made, and from beginning to end, it never goes quite as you may have planned it to. There is this X factor that persuades the outcome to become unique and one of a kind when it's authentic.
So how things come into creation, it's been called by you or by another. And that's how and why. It's been called and it's been called forth. And I would say that it's your destiny that moves the greatest creations that we'll ever create with God in our lives. So the potential of what needs to come through you, or is coming through you rather, because I believe that your the will that lies in your soul that is something you will get to and you will do. So the will of your what needs to be created in your destiny is called forth from you, and it's always been on its way to you. So all of your creations, all of your destiny is slowly on its way to you. Think of it as like this marching troop coming to you. And every soldier that comes is another one of your creations of something that your destiny is called into form. So as a creation comes in, like I just talked about, it's like it's a spark from the divine. I think of creation in its raw form to be, it's like this energy or like spark, and then it comes in, we go along for the ride with us, and then we let go and it just goes back out, and everything is moving. Like the most solid of objects, like stones, have been called into creation, and it's moving out of creation as we speak. The earth, the sun and the moon, it's just the duration from which when it touches into the universe, into the when it touches out, is determined by the potential and the destiny of each creation that's been created.
Mm-hmm.
So there's everything moves in its own speed, at its own pace, at its own time. And, you know, we don't need to strangle it on the way through. We just touch it and go for the ride.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, man. So you explain in the book as well, and that creating wakes us up little by little. And how is that? How does that work like that?
Well, it's sort of, that was my experience, is if you work at your craft long enough, you'll come to know the gift of silence. And it's the zone. We go into that space, mm-hmm. and by going into that space, we know ourselves.
So there's a term that you hear about from time to time called imposter syndrome, where people feel fake in certain situations when they're creating something or they're involved in anything. It may feel like it's out of their wheelhouse, or maybe it's a little unfamiliar to them. But this is something that prevents people from taking action in terms of creating or becoming involved in things. Because as you said, creation isn't just an artistic expression. It's also creating your life, making decisions, and then events happen and unfold, right? So this could be sort of this situation was unfamiliar to me in the very beginning. And there could be a little voice in my head saying, no, Seamus, you have no business even going near this type of subject matter. You're unfamiliar with it. This is unfamiliar territory to you. You shouldn't explore it. That even was a little voice in my head that tried to discourage me from pursuing this project with you. Obviously made the right decision by ignoring that and just going forward anyway. But how does the mind tend to intersect and create disruption within us when we're branching out into that unfamiliar territory? This is a big thing, because it could keep you stuck in a mode, and you may never evolve or experience new things.
Yeah, and this is when the mind disrupts the process. It's squishing out the divinity. It's taking away the creative aspect of what it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the mind has a negative tendency. It's, you know, when I started watching the mind and cataloging my thoughts, like I said back in the beginning sessions, that I was blown away that 80% of my thoughts were negative. So the mind has this tendency to deal in in negative tendencies, and self-doubt and worry tends to creep in. And then if you start to see, well, in the act of doing something, you'll start to see your flaw and then fixate on that and then create a whole dialogue about it. It reminds me of the story by Achan Brahim, the story of two bad bricks. And it's a really neat metaphor, and I've used it before with my artist when I was training them. So Achan, he was a Buddhist monk, and he was commissioned to help build this building around him, and he had to build a wall out of bricks. And so the master leading the monastery said, we need you to come and build this wall. And he's like, this is out of my wheelhouse. I can't do that. And they said, you know, just do your best. So he started building this wall, and he found that when he was laying the bricks, he'd tap one side, the other side would come up, and then he'd tap the other side, and the other side would come up, and then it'd go out of level. And he was having a heck of a time, but he took pride in taking his time in, you know, completing this wall brick by brick by brick. And then when he was all finished, he stood back and he was so proud of himself. And then all of a sudden he realized that there was two bricks in the center of the wall that were crooked. And he was furious. Like, he was so mad. Like, how could he not notice that? Like, they were so crooked, and he wanted to actually smash the wall down and start all over again. And he went to try to chip at the mortar, but it was too hard. He couldn't get the bricks out. Mm-hmm. And so for weeks, he was beating himself up over these two bad bricks, you know. And when the monastery was finished, when people came in for tours, he would always insist that he do all the tours so he could lead them away from that wall, so they didn't see those two bad bricks. Mm-hmm. And then one day, one of the masters who was coming through the temple was with him, and the master's looking at the wall, and he says, "This is a beautiful structure you've built here." And the monk Ajahn looks at him and he says, "How could you be saying that? Are you blind?" He says, "Don't you see the two bad bricks?" He said, "This is the worst part of the whole structure." And the master says, "No, I don't see the two bad bricks. I see the 998 good ones." He says, "Only you're the only one looking at the two bad bricks." And so that's how the mind disrupts creation and what's created. We're never going to be flawless. We're going to make mistakes. You know, my book, for example, there's spelling mistakes in there, and there's grammatical mistakes. But I tell people that's just proof real humans made it. Mm-hmm. I don't look at the two bad bricks. I just don't care. You know, there's so much goodness in all the things that we create, and the mind will want to focus on the two bad bricks. So in creation, we kick the mind out. It's just a feeble voice in your head, and allow the beauty of what it is that you're creating to really come over you.
I think that's a really great message for people, because a common thing with artists is that they're never satisfied with what they can do. Like, even if you were to think about where you started and you could look at your progress, even if it's a short period of time, some people will say that the catalyst in evolution is being unsatisfied with what you're currently capable of doing. And that keeps you pushing forward, because there's always a part of what you do that you really don't like. But that will always seem to chase you all of the time. There's always going to be a little thing about what you do that you're not quite happy with.
Well, the infliction of an artist is when somebody says, "What's your favorite tattoo I've done?" I always say the next one. it's always the next one. You know, and that's that little part of you that wants to just keep pushing the envelope, because you'll see yourself a little bit better than where you're at. And that's sort of something that you chase your... I was chasing my whole career. Mm-hmm. You know, I would see... When I'd do a job, I'd see the final product. It should have been this way or that way. And it's kind of the part that you don't allow it to drive you mad, but you allow it to drive you artistically further into your craft. Mm-hmm. To just put more love and devotion into each piece so that you can outdo the last.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a pretty interesting story about a visit you got from a man at the Hudson's Bay.
Yeah, it's a funny story, and it was one day I was sitting in the back tattooing, and my front person, I had a gift store in the front of my tattoo shop, and I had different gifts from the different cultures of the world. So this guy comes in, and he owned a slice of the Hudson's Bay store in London. The Hudson's Bay used to rent out sections to different people. So he had a section, and then when they closed it, he had all this stuff. So my front person came back, my friend Tisha. She came back and said, there's a guy here that wants to sell you some things. I said, well, bring him back. So this little man comes to the back of my store, and I felt something about him, and so he said that he had this catalog in his hands, and he said he had some stuff for sale, and I says, yeah, I'll meet with you, Tish, set that up as soon as possible. So she goes to the front with him, and I'm sitting there tattooing my client, and all of a sudden a feeling comes over me, he's a teacher. And it was just such a random thought, like, of all the people that could stumble in off the street, what's the chances of this guy's like a spiritual teacher? So I excused myself from my client. I said, I'll just give me a second. I'll be right back. So I go up front in the store, and he and Tish are setting up the meeting, which happened to be the next day. So I asked him. I didn't know how to ask him, so I just blurted it out. Are you a teacher? And he says, yes, I am. So in my mind, I'm like, holy shit, that I was almost going up there to be embarrassed, but I'm just like, holy mackerel. Okay. That's what I want to talk to you about. I will look at your stuff too, but I want to talk to you about that. He says, very good. And he just kind of nods at me, and I walk away. And the nod and the look in his eye is like, he was acknowledging that maybe that's why he really actually came in. Maybe he had a feeling or a sense that I needed to see him. Mm-hmm. So the next morning, I get up and I go down to the store, and Tish says, well, your first appointment canceled, so now you have 2 hours to meet with that guy if he comes back. So we were scheduled to meet at Coffee Culture, and my friend Sean was with me, and... You know, he asked if he could come. I'm like, yeah, sure. You got to meet this guy. I just have this feeling he's a really deep person. So we get down to Coffee Culture to the cafe, and he's in the back waiting for us. So we sit down, and with barely even saying hello to him, I said, can you tell me about the Beloved Within? And he looks at me and he starts talking, and almost like the Paul Duff thing, he didn't stop for like an hour and 40 minutes. And the things that he was telling me were, it was like, I was fighting to stay awake because the energy coming up in me was so high. It just felt like he was frying my mind. So we get to the end of the conversation, and I look at my... He leaves, and I asked him, I said, well, can I meet with you again? And he says, well, if you need to see me, you'll find me. I said, well, can I get your phone number or address or anything? He says, He says, no. He says, if you really need to see me, you'll know where to find me. And if you don't, you'll be like I never existed. And I'm like, who says stuff like that? Like, that's just weird. That's very weird. But so I'm still in the... So then he leaves, and I'm sitting there, and I'm stunned at what he's told me. He's talking about being multidimensional and about astral travel, and he's given me exercises on how to maintain a more constant awareness of the present moment. But I look over at Sean, and I said to Sean, I said, did you catch that? I said, that one part he was talking about being multidimensional, and Sean's like, no, man, I didn't catch that at all. And then I asked him another part, and he's like, no, I didn't hear that. I said, well, what did you hear, Sean? And he's like, I don't remember anything. And Sean just totally blanked out. And I swear to God, that conversation was not for him. It was just for me. So it was just a wild experience. And we never know what's in moving into our lives. And I think that guy was just a gift of God. It was something that needed to come into my life at that point. Whatever I had in the works or I was in creation of, I attracted that man to me. Mm-hmm. So it was quite an experience, and it greatly added to the depth of understanding the beloved in me.
Wow. So what is your understanding of the beloved within then?
It's my soul. It most simply put, it's the soul in me. It's what I see as God inside of me. And that's why when I asked him what the beloved is, he really taught me about what's essential to know, to stay anchored in the moment at hand. And he gave me a practice to become really deeply rooted into this present moment, because it's only through this moment that we can understand and touch the beloved within.
Mm-hmm. And so we talked about earlier whether this chapter applies to people who consider themselves creatives, which the answer was yes, because we're creating our lives. So how do our choices impact our lives?
They create chain reactions. So, you know, like this choice, for instance, you know, you asked me if I would do a podcast, and you know, you had a choice when the idea came into you. You had a choice whether to entertain that or not. So you bought my book, you read it, and you had whatever experience you had with it, and then it spawned that you wanted to open up a dialogue with me about it. You had the choice to go with that creation or not. And because you entertained it, it set forth this massive chain reaction. Now, for this, I had this week of holidays booked in the schedule. We're spending the whole week working on this, creating this series.
Mm-hmm.
When we make a decision, we draw all the forces of nature to attract the essence of what it is that we're looking to create. And this is sort of what, when we start to draw things and we make a choice, it turns us. So we could be facing one direction, and then when we make a choice, we either turn a little bit more to the right or to the left, and then we start walking. Every choice that we make turns our head just a degree. Some choices turn our heads a really big degree.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a result of all of the choices that we make. Either it's leading us to our higher nature, or it leading us toward our purpose, or it's leading us towards our lower nature. And it could be one of the worst choices we make that and it shoots us in a different direction. But that's the basis of trajectory.
Mm-hmm. Which is the next thing I actually wanted to talk to you about, what trajectory is. If we could discuss that for a minute.
Yeah, trajectory is an important topic. The further you get down your path, it becomes more and more important. Now think of it this way. If you were standing at the edge of a field and you were like in the center at the edge of the field, and your trajectory is wherever you're, if you started walking, you would end up in whatever direction you follow. Mm-hmm. So if you're standing in the center and I turn your head just a little degree to the right, by time you were to walk all the way to the end of the field, even if you turned your head a little bit, you would end up a long ways from the center of the field.
Mm-hmm.
So trajectory is a very important thing to understand, that the choices that we make, although they seem small, that they can get you a long ways away from your starting point. And they can move us in a positive direction or move us in a very negative direction. Mm. And it's trajectory becomes more and more, it becomes more increasingly important in our spiritual path.
I like how you're talking about the multiplication effect of a small degree and distance traveled. So how does our level of consciousness affect our trajectory in that case?
Okay, so consciousness has a great deal to do with our trajectory. Within our range of consciousness, we have our lows and we have our highs. You know, there's our highest potential and there's our lowest potential. When we make a choice that's in alignment with our purpose, we actually grow in consciousness. So our consciousness expands. This by continuously making choices that are in alignment with our purpose and that are loving and positive, we move into deeper states of consciousness. So our consciousness expands. Now, how this affects our range of trajectory is that our trajectory, as our consciousness grows, our trajectory gets wider and further reaching. Mm-hmm. So what happens is our circle of influence gets larger. We then manifest things faster, and our actions affect more and more people in the process. In the native culture, they talk about the razor's edge, and so discernment gets to be so that we're walking this tighter and tighter path, because our trajectory, as our consciousness expands, our trajectory widens and grows out further. Our choices start to have massive impacts. So you can imagine, it's like, I'll illustrate it through growing a social network. So you say you join Instagram and you post a picture and it's something, you know, really loving and positive, but you only have one follower, you know. So if that follower was watching, you affected that one person. Mm-hmm. And then 6 months down the road, you keep posting really loving and positive things, and now you have about 600 followers. So every time you make a post, you affect possibly up to 600 people. And it just keeps growing. And that's how it works with consciousness. As we become more conscious, our circle of influence and our range and reach gets further and further reaching. Now, you can imagine the reach and the effect you would have if you had, say, 2 million followers on an Instagram account. You know, if you said one word that was negative or racist, you know, you could suddenly incur a massive social backlash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if you say something really positive, you can really move and influence a great number of people just in one little action. So that's sort of like trajectory and consciousness. As you grow in consciousness, your range and your trajectory becomes more important. And what you do, how you're discerning yourself on the path becomes a bigger topic.
I think that's really well explained. So when it comes to our path, how do we identify truth? Because I think that's super important when we're talking about trajectory and the overall level of responsibility that goes with that.
Well, the truth never changes, but our understanding of it varies greatly. There's a big difference between your truth and the truth. So just because your truth doesn't, just because something is your truth doesn't make it entirely true. The absolute truth lies at the heart of our soul. On a soul level, I know that I know the truth, like the ultimate truth. It's in my soul. But how we identify, how to identify that truth is to bypass the mind. You know, kind of like how we're talking in that diagram of processing your environment through the soul.
Mm-hmm.
So you bypass the mind. You bypass all your filters. You bypass your mood or your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And you let your heart determine what's true for you. Now, it's tricky to discern what's your heart and what's the mind creeping. And so it takes practice. Learning how to identify truth takes practice. And you learn how to dip further and further into the heart and bypass the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So make it a practice. Try to test out your heart. You know, build up your truth meter. Learn how to rest in that silent part of you. And there really is a knowingness.
Now you also say in the book that completing your destiny only needs your consent. What does that mean?
Because all of your destiny is on its way to you. So remember I was saying just a few minutes ago, your destiny is a creation that it's on its way to you.
You just grab on and away you go.
So all you have to do is say yes. But this isn't easy to do because the mind enters the equation and says, no, I don't want to do that. I'd rather take a more comfortable route, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What if your destiny says you need to walk across Canada? There's been people that did that. Or Terry Fox tried running across Canada with one leg or...
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like what was it in him that told him he had to do that? He could have very easily said, no, I don't have two legs. I think I'd much rather try to get across town than across the country.
Right.
But that's the thing. All we have to do is consent and our destiny is born.
So how can we wake up to our potential then?
We do it by living in the present moment and then by going one moment to the next. So the mind likes to plan and it maps out our route. It's like a GPS that never shuts off. It's just constantly plotting our route. And when we embrace our love for self and others in the world, we reach our potential at an exponential rate. You know, we have to be willing to fall and fail. We have to let go of fear. That's another big one that keeps us from reaching our potential and living life like it's an ultimate creation. We reach our potential by setting down our mind and resting in the eternal silence that's found within.
So to wrap things up then, is there anything you would like to add in order to summarize the importance of creating your own life?
Yeah, understand that your life really is your greatest creation. It's the biggest contribution that you're going to make to this world. You know, you'll do many things, but your life itself is your biggest creation. When you think of your life as a creation, it changes how we approach it. Understand that you are on a collaborative co-adventure with God. You're not alone while you're creating in your life. Being a co-creator with the divine makes you connected with God. And being connected with God in your collaborative co-creations is a gift, and it's a gift that you're given. Creation is a gift, and your life is a gift, and then all we have to do to make the best of it is to accept it and allow it to be created through us.